Welcome to a special edition of Poets Cafe. I'm guest host Suzanne Lummis, and today we are doing a tribute to Austin Strauss. And my guests are the poets Linda Albertano, Cecilia Wallach, Laurel Ann Bogan, and Uncle Ruthie, who also has a program on KPFK called Halfway Down the Stairs. And we'll be memorializing and appreciating the poems of Austin Strauss. Now, many of you out there are aware of and met Wanda Coleman, one of the best-known poets to ever emerge from Los Angeles over the past 50 years. And whoever knew Wanda Coleman knew Austin Strauss, because you couldn't know Wanda without knowing Austin. They went everywhere together. I don't even think I've seen one of them in a room by themselves, and thus maybe the other one had gone to the restroom or something. They were always side by side, reading together, madly in love, although if I'm to believe Austin Strauss, they also fought like hell, so he told me. Maybe he was exaggerating, who knows. And Austin himself was a terrific poet, a poet with a great, robust humor, a fabulous performer of his work. I think, in my opinion, he was every bit as good a performer as Wanda herself. Wanda was a little bit more dramatic, but he had razor-sharp comedy, timing, terrific energy, spirited, a compelling, funny poet and performer. So he died on July 20th. And Wanda has died about 3 years before. And they often say that when couples are extremely close, and heavens knows they were extremely close, that the other partner doesn't usually last longer than about 3 years. And that was about how long he lasted without Wanda. This poem is called If I Were a Wall, and it's published in Wide Awake, Poets of Los Angeles and Beyond. If I were a wall, there'd be obscenities, political slogans, and initials of dead lovers scrawled in red and yellow, blue, green, and black along my belly. I'd hold birds of paradise and ravens and sparrows and all the wrens and robins of the universe, and they'd sing and feed and build nests and paint poems down my side with their bird droppings. If I were a wall. And if I were a wall, I'd hold back the floods and keep out the stampeding cattle, but allow every horse to jump me. And I'd amble slowly among houses and let my stones mumble hymns while the farmers slept, if I were a wall. And if I were a wall, I'd be hard and winding as a frozen river, or soft and deadly as a sleeping cobra. Or in my meanderings, I'd be a story written in sibilance and curlicues if I were a wall. And if I were a wall, I'd let myself tumble into fragments to be dug up and buried in museums, or be carved into faces that are worshipped at midnight by moon-driven witches if I were a wall. And I'd refuse the weight of corpses, or the smack of noon sun, or gouging by bullets, or wailing of mourners, or anything but warm drizzles and tall grass brushing my thighs, if I were a wall. And I'd dream of entering myself and becoming a suite of rooms, multiplying and dividing, turning and turning, until I was an infinite cavern, all chiaroscuro and texture, where unfettered dreams could wander in search of unsuspecting dreamers. If I were a wall. Okay, so the well-known Los Angeles poet and performance artist, I'd say veteran, but you can't possibly be old enough to be a veteran. When she's old enough, she will be a veteran poet and performance artist and beloved figure of Los Angeles. Who, and you have your poem on a wall, don't you?
I do, indeed. You're
speaking of wall. Yes. Well, that is why this is such a perfect segue, because it now goes to a person who has her poem on a wall. Okay.
I'm going to be reading from The Love Project, which is a book that Austin and Wanda did together. The first half of the book are poems that Austin did for Wanda, and the second half are Wanda's poems for him. Now, this particular poem really resonated with me because I've had the same feeling so many times, just chewing, an ordinary experience like chewing on a piece of toast or looking out the window or seeing the face of a loved one. When you are so filled with life that it's like a peak experience, and suddenly you're aware of your own mortality because you're so afraid of this beauty slipping away from you. So this poem is called This Moment. At the dining table, chewed and savored, reverberating in my skull, seeping into memory, staying forever. And when and if it ever dies, if everything dies when the person dies, I will feel the loss, somehow a loss to posterity, to the universe, of a moment that throbbed with life, that was so exquisitely itself, as Wanda laughs to a movie in the bedroom, as sunbeams stipple the backyard yellow-green, and Dambula the cat sleeps beneath my feet, and this warm cereal cooked for me with love by my love goes slowly down, second by second, year by year, filling me, becoming me, turning me into someone old and new at once, who was and is and will be here.
Okay. We're going to hear from Cecilia Wallach, again known to all the poets of Los Angeles, who have been around a long time. And if you don't know who Cecilia Wallach is, you're either not a poet of Los Angeles, or you haven't been around a long time, or both, one or both of those. And she is also a world traveler. That's why every time I think of inviting Cecilia to an event, she often turns out to be in, how do you pronounce it, Krakow, or somewhere, or Vienna, always the most exotic and exciting places, never a dull place. You never go to anywhere boring, right?
Everywhere. Suzanne, I spend a lot of time in Shepherdsville, Kentucky.
Oh, that explains a lot. That explains everything.
Which is exotic, yeah. Too, in its way.
Yeah, in its fashion, right. I bet it is. It would be exotic for me, mm-hmm. because I've never been
and
there.
And you would be exotic for Shepherdsville.
That it would be a perfect match.
Shepherdsville might never recover, Suzanne.
I think maybe that's where I belong. Okay. All right. So we will now hear from Cecilia Wallach.
Thanks, Suzanne, for inviting me to be part of this. When we sit here and I just feel the great gaping hole left in the Los Angeles circle of poets by the absence of both Wanda yeah. and Austin. Yeah. I came to Los Angeles as a very young poet, and in the early 80s, I just felt like I got swept into this loving, generous, eccentric, crazy mm-hmm. community of poets. Yeah. And I really cherish the memories of those times. I yeah. remember the first time I saw Wanda and Austin at a loft downtown where uh-huh. Wanda was reading, and I felt like my hair was blown back as I sat uh-huh. in the audience. Uh-huh. And then they used to do a program here on KPFK, and I was it was probably 1986. I probably hadn't published a word, and they had me on the program, they treated me always like, you know, a beloved little sister.
I'd like to mention something about that, too, that Austin was maybe the first person to do a poetry show. Mm-hmm. It's now a Poets Cafe, and Lois P. Jones hosts it. But Austin's was called The Poetry Connection, and it had a long run from October 81 to June 96. And he did, as you said just now, he did introduce so many new poets to Los Angeles and to the poetry community.
And then I remember the last time we were all together, I think you all were there, or a lot of you were there, at the launch party for Wanda's book, The World Falls Away.
Yeah.
And that was one of the best poetry nights ever. There was singing, there was dancing, there was performing and collaborating, and I had invited some of my USC students to come. I said, you can't miss this. Uh-huh. And they were completely blown away. And it was just, you know, a loving, generous evening where they invited a lot of other poets to participate in a real celebration. So as I was looking through Austin's poems, to see what to read, I came across a poem I'd read before, but it hadn't caught my attention the way it catches my attention now. I think it's kind of another side of Austin. That was, I think we were always aware of it, but it wasn't the dominant part of the personality he showed to the world. And this is called The Heart-Shaped Room. I imagine it was written when he first came to Los Angeles and before he met Wanda. The Heart-Shaped Room. Divorced and staying with my parents, I am, in a way, home. But my dreams are nightmares, and I'm obsessed with my son. I try to focus on something, a green diamond-shaped dresser knob, or an oval mirror, or one of the framed photos of me at various stages in my career as a child. Why I've come here, obscure. Why I stay, unclear. The lure of California, the weather, beaches, women, friends, or just to rest or escape from what I must do. Reasons enough. Yet I could go crazy in such a room, as I have in such a room before. Maybe I'll leave sooner than planned. Changing plans is becoming my big frisson, as if to make then break is a higher, more intense form of choosing. I've been accused of acting on whims, as if this were a character flaw. I say, have the courage of your whims. But their terrible hesitancy weakens my bones. In a room of my parents' house, a man wakes in the dark, surprised to find himself a child.
Gosh, there's, you know, I think of his poems as so humorous, and they often are very funny, but there's also tremendous pathos and a wistfulness in his poetry, and a remarkable honesty, a straightforward, just a naked honesty. And I really think he was a very fine poet, and in many ways, a little bit under-recognized as a poet.
Especially the more serious the more poetic. And I've been reading this book, and some of these are very touching.
Yeah, he had he really was a very lovely poet. This is a special edition of Poets Cafe. I'm guest host Suzanne Lummis, and today we are doing a tribute to Austin Strauss. My guests are Linda Albertano, Cecilia Wallach, Uncle Ruthie, Laurel Ann Bogan. Now we are to Uncle Ruthie. Now are you going to read the one that you wrote yourself to
Austin? I'm wondering, because I do want to read this one called The Poet. This poem would rather not have a title. It's very funny, but it's very often we do this and wonder about things and why they're named. And I will read the one that I wrote about him, because you need to know that Austin Strauss never stopped working on his poems. And when I ran two poetry groups. In fact, they didn't know I'd wrote poetry till we had a dinner party at my house and the price of admission was a poem. But I do mostly shows for kids and make albums. But I was always writing poetry, and they were always... I saw them down here with the Poetry Connection. But when I had my poetry groups at the library, the Westwood Library and at the Workman Circle, he would run out after somebody bought a book, chase after them, saying, "Wait, wait," with his pen, and open it to a poem and make a correction in the books. You know,
that's a perfectionist.
So I thought that was the funniest thing. I understand that. Mm-hmm. You look at your old poems sometimes and think, "Oh, I shouldn't have said that. I should have said," you know, you wish you could, but he did. This is called The Posthumous Editor. Even though he is a poet, Austin Strauss, like any mortal, will someday die. But not entirely. If you have ever purchased a book from this perfectionist, soon after his death, you can expect him to appear at your bedside and, removing his book from your nightstand, turn to the page containing your favorite poem and writing in the margins or between the lines with his celestial felt tip pen, he will make changes. After which, relieved and restored, he will return his book to your nightstand, grab some fruit from your fridge, and leave you in peace till the next edit.
Okay, yeah, that's something. I like that in a poet.
I've got
a
copy for each of you.
All right, so I like that perfectionism and that, all right, so Laurel, we are to Laurel, and Laurel was born in L.A.
I was.
So that's something.
And I'm still
claim.
Here. It hasn't
still
run me out
here.
Yet.
That's right. There's no running Laurel out of town.
Yep.
And if she left town, people would go abduct her and bring her back into town. So,
I would like to read what I think Austin's most famous poem. It's called An All-Purpose Apology Poem. I used to read this poem an awful lot, and I always liked it. It would always make me smile. And the first time I read it, we were in an anthology together called The Maverick Poets. That was published by and edited by Steve Cowett, another great California poet who is no longer with us, sadly. He's been gone about a year and a half. Anyway, All-Purpose Apology Poem. As a responsible adult, I must admit my guilt. I did it. Not the weather, not my wife, not some mood that mysteriously entered as I slept. I did it. Guilt may be too strong a word, but in fact, I did the thing. I made it happen. No cause outside, no God, no devil, no accident of fate, no drug or drink or pill. I did it. I used my mind. I moved my hands and arms and legs. 'Twas me who do'd it. I broke the blank. I ruined the blank. I said the thing not said. I was insensitive. I was at fault. I did it. I drove the car. I dropped the dish. I lost the key. I swung my fist. I tore the page. I spilled the beer. I did it. I was mean. I was stupid. I was petty. I was cold. Check one. I did it. Not you, not 10 other guys, not my parents, teachers, political leaders, not even the capitalists or Russians, not my stars, nor the moon or sun or winds and tides, not my dog or my cat or my bird. It was me, me, me. I'm ashamed. I'm sorry. I won't do it again. What a fool I was. I did it. Mea culpa. It was me.
Oh, well, and we know why. There's no wonder that's a famous poem, and as you were reading it.
I was channeling. I was channeling you, Austin, up there dancing with Wanda.
She was channeling for sure. I'm sitting here and I can tell you she was definitely channeling. And also, I think I can say this on KPFK safely without getting a bunch of my audience angry at me. Or, well, you never know. Anybody could get angry at me for any time, for any reason. And I would have to issue an all-purpose apology. But anyway, I was thinking, now that has political resonances for me. I'm now wishing that, what was it, 62 million people would apologize for what they did on November 8th, 2016. And that's what I see. It's a poem for all time, so we'll never go out of style. Now we can. I'm going to read another poem. And I was thinking as I was reading, hearing, and listening, so nice to hear this range of poems here. And it makes me think about how Austin and person, when I, my experience of him, face to face, his ego was not small. Nobody ever accused him of having too small an ego. I got to do something about that shrunken little ego that you're going around with. But in his poetry, all this vulnerability comes out. All of his doubts, his self-doubts, he ridicules himself, he makes fun of himself, he asks forgiveness. I think that is so, isn't that so often true in one's art, that this other hidden side of you comes out, which was why art is so great, why we like it, why we need it. Anybody wants to find this marvelous poem, you can find it in Wide Awake, Poets of Los Angeles and Beyond, the anthology. And this is in memoriam for Delmar Schwartz. Delmar Schwartz was a striking and influential figure and writer, poet, short story writer of the 50s, whose it's a collection of short stories called In Dreams Begin Responsibilities. And Dreams Begin Responsibilities was very influential in short fiction in that particular moment. Lou Reed studied with Delmar Schwartz and was extremely influenced by him. And Delmar Schwartz, you know, I still like the, I shouldn't say this, but you can all, we can edit it out. I still like the 19th century expression, went mad. Now we lost that. Nobody goes mad anymore. I mean, I go mad, but we call it something else. That seems less interesting somehow.
Need to talk to 19th century people.
I know. We do need to have that cross-culture, decades and centuries conversation going on. He lost his mind, or whatever you want to call it. But he was brilliant. And so this is for Delmar Schwartz, and it is called Even Paranoids. Shadowed by shadows, stared at by strangers. Silence on the phone, definitely not God's. CIA? FBI, IRS, some crazed ex-girlfriend obsessed with my number, eyes in the wallpaper, ears among blossoms, ex-wives gossip in their memoirs, peddle diaries for bucks, babbled about on talk shows, giggles and smirks, former lovers fired darts at my photos. I'm the villain in nightmares, my son's hairy monster. Even the ocean keeps shushing my name. Late at night, far away, the insistent yowling of cats. That which I'd rather keep secret found lipstick in toilets scrawled across skies. Crows mock my excuses. Curs mimic my lies. I'm riddled by missiles shot by unerring tongues. Mine Swiss cheesy with holes, brain leaking, self-esteem. An inner homonucleus screeches curses at this so mangled existence. I turn from the face that uglies at me when I shave. Who's driving this hearse, stealing my lines, rasping through my lips words I don't recognize? Can I trust my next move or anything I say? What the heck am I up to? I'm the wrong one to ask. Even I'm out to get me. Okay. All right. Another poem that we might all find something to
Indeed.
Connect with.
Oh, my. Very noir and, here.
Yeah, that's right. Kind of you've got your all-purpose apology, your paranoia, your all-purpose paranoia poem. I sort of fumbled a word. It should say mind with a D on the end. Mind, Swiss cheesy with holes. So as I go around, if there's a short memory you'd like to tell, we can always fit that in, as long as it's not a 20-minute memory, because that can happen too.
I have a little one.
All right. You want to go over there to you, Laurel? You want to give us a memory?
Oh,
and then
right.
We'll go, okay, we'll do it. Let's go the other way around this time.
Okay.
Before we started with Linda, this time we'll start with you and go around, and you can read one poem,
okay.
too, and tell one short memory.
Well, this is a memory that is the story of how Wanda and Austin got together. Because of me, actually. Many years ago in the 1970s, I used to go out with Austin, and he had come to Los Angeles to begin the Los Angeles outpost of Amnesty International. And not being from Los Angeles, he did not understand the importance of automobiles. And he was living near MacArthur Park. I, of course, had an automobile because I was from Los Angeles and I knew one had to have an automobile. Now, there was an anthology that had just been published called Amerotica, Poems of Erotic Poetry, anthology, and they were having a publication party in Long Beach on a Friday evening, and it began, I think, at 7:30. Now, I told Austin I would pick him up at 5:30 because it was a Friday and it was rush hour. And people who know me know that I like to be places early. So I went to pick him up. Oh, and I should mention, Austin had a poem there, I had a poem, and Wanda also. They were all going to be at this reading in Long Beach. So I went to pick him up at his apartment at 5:30, and no Austin. Well, I said to myself, I'll just have to wait. So I waited until 5:45, no Austin. 6 p.m., still no Austin. 6:30, still not there. About 6:35, he shows up. Now, I have to tell you at this point that I was still in my late 20s and did not know how to process anger at that time. So I was very passive-aggressive, let's just say that. And so as I was driving to Long Beach, steam was coming out of my ears. I was so angry because the traffic was horrible. I was trying to get there in time for the reading, and I just was not talking and fuming. Well, let's just say this. I drove down to Long Beach with Austin, but Austin drove back to his apartment with Wanda. And they were together ever since. And the three of us used to laugh that story all the time. Mm-hmm. I do have a poem with me that he wrote for me many, many years ago.
It sounds like he owed you an all-purpose apology.
He did. Well, you know what? I have to say, in the grand scheme of things, I pat myself on the back because I think there's was a relationship and a marriage made in heaven, and they were perfect for each other.
No, it was written in the stars.
Definitely.
I think
and
it would
I
have
really,
happened in any circumstance. They were bound to meet up. And
I think so, and I really... I knew that they were meant for each other much more than he and I were. So I really did not begrudge him that. Anyway, so this is a poem he wrote for me called Entering, and it's from a magazine called Antenna, and it's the winter 1979 edition of this magazine. Entering for Laurel Ann Bogan. I fumble for my keys, get the keys, into the locks, open the door, and stand on the threshold. Tonight I'll be a giraffe or a temple, float into this room like a monk on a raft. I'll shed my clothes and drop blossoms, be insect or lemon, iron or dandelion, wolfhound or rat, inspecting the walls, and the room will open into ocean or orchard, pasture or desert, a hole to leap into, a sheer cliff or a stage, and I'll close the door behind me and begin to change costumes, listening for the audience mumbling behind mirrors.
Very, and you just discovered that poem, didn't you?
Yes,
didn't know. Had you ever seen it ever?
Don't really remember ever seeing it. My God, it was 1979. I'm on.
You were only six. Right?
I was a mere child. Yes,
that's
indeed.
That's right.
It was in the archives at Beyond Baroque, where I'm on the board of directors, and we were going through the archives, and they let me have it because they had more than one copy.
That's a nice present.
It was a very nice present.
Yeah, sort of an after-the-fact present
from the grave, so long ago.
Yeah, exactly, from so long ago. This is a special edition of Poets Cafe. I'm guest host Suzanne Lummis, and today we are doing a tribute to Austin Strauss. My guests are Linda Albertano, Cecilia Wallach, Uncle Ruthie, Laurel Ann Bogan. Okay, Uncle Ruthie, you've got something there that...
I've got a little thing and a slightly bigger thing. I do want to share the back of my poetry book because I don't think anybody ever will say these things about me. Austin did. Mm-hmm. And the little blurbs on the back.
Uh-huh.
Wanda wrote something very respectful and loving. And he wrote, "These are a lover's poems. Ruthie's earthy sensuality deepens the pain of love lost, love remembered. This is a woman I wish I'd known 50 years ago. We would have slathered each other with tongues of poetry, or else run screaming with terror of each other's fiery needs. Constantly surprising, these are the poems of a woman forever young." When you get old, they say things like, "forever young." Mm-hmm. And what did Wannan say? A poet who has lived richly and loved deeply, they make sure that you understand how very old I really am now.
It's true. When I was 26, nobody ever called me youthful in spirit or forever young or something like that. So it doesn't happen, right? It's always a bad sign when you start hearing that.
I'm waiting right now. I'm waiting right now for someone to say, "Can I help you with that poem, ma'am?" They do it at the market.
That's right. No, you look like you can't carry that book of poetry.
Yeah, the other memory that I have is such a fun one. One day, Wanda, who was given to temper, was standing in front of all the mailboxes here at KPFK and doing the Poetry Connection that day. And we had a new, I won't say who it is, we had a new manager. And Wanda didn't know she was standing right there. Mm-hmm. And she went into a tirade about how awful the station was, using every word she could think of, and how badly it was run, and how badly people treated her, and so forth. And then I had a dinner party. The price of admission was a poem, and I found out that everybody I knew was really a poet. So Austin and Wanda came, but when my station manager walked in with her friend, Wanda's face changed, grew white, if that's possible. and she took me into the kitchen and said, "I had a temper tantrum, and that woman was right there." I don't think the manager even remembered. I really don't. But it was a great party.
It's interesting, but she remembered that. That's interesting to know.
That Wanda remembered having a temper tantrum?
That she remembered that she... You know, that the woman had overheard her, and because, she did.
But I don't think the woman remembered, which is even more interesting.
She didn't remember. I've had situations like that where I remember something I did where I recently apologized to my teacher, Charles Hanselcheck in Fresno, for something that I'd done 30 years ago. And he thought I was out of my mind. What are you talking about? I don't have any memory of this at all. It was just
how we
get obsessive about these things. So
here's my poem.
Okay.
I find that Austin was capable of a wildness of language, and he was very far out sometimes. Mm-hmm. And this poem, I think, does it. It's surreal. I love it. It takes an ordinary day, and we all have ordinary days, and he makes you realize how wild and strange everything in your ordinary day really is. He called this poem "Would Rather Not Have a Title." Suddenly, everything strikes me as odd. The construction of my finger, or the way this room is put together. Suddenly, not a thing seems definitely as it ought to be, preordained and certain, the necessary result of some prior cause. Why must chairs look like this, I wonder, and the human face take this particular form? And isn't it quite boring that mighty oaks from tiny acorns grow, that all seeds of things become these very things? The obsessive regularity of nature, of day and night, birth and death and seasons, the unreasonable sameness of it, I find appalling, galling, chilling, dulling, deadly. Suddenly, I wish everything were different. Give chairs wings, for instance, and call them bears. And let bears glow green and speak in tongues. I mean, everything seems awfully wrong. The wrong people in the wrong jobs, the wrong streets lined with the wrong houses and trees, all the wrong colors and the shapes that people take, the ugly noises they emit. I'd rather they spoke music, harps and bassoons, piccolos and cornets, and I'd like some purple people. Some blue, some striped, some dotted, and their hair. Jesus, their hair would be made of silk or potatoes or anything other than the tangly stuff. And why do people have hair at all? What a mess. Why not little flowers that bloom and fall? I'm fed up with beds and walls and windows and lampposts, cars and sidewalks, rooftops and billboards, radios and noodles. I want a cool sun and dry water and previously unknown colors and people who love in unheard-of ways. Suddenly, mere travel isn't enough. Bike riding, dart throwing, dreaming, surrealism, madness, or philosophizing, even poetry isn't enough. I want too much. I want to be you, or a bird, air, or the street, remembering, or a dead fish. I want to be my own brain, writhing in its wash of memories. I want to be anything but this room, and this summer, and this dumb, limited, predictable old skin.
Jeez, it's a really fine poem.
It's in such vigor.
There always was. And in his performance, tremendous vitality, vibrance, a robustness, a vigor that is invested in the language and not only just his performance. And as you were reading it, I was thinking, you know, I would be delighted to open up one of the more prestigious high-end literary magazines and read a poem like that. And I would prefer it to many things I do read in those magazines. It's interesting that he was completely barred from those magazines. I don't think I ever saw his work in one of the, what I call the high-end prestige and reputation-making literary magazines in the country. We only have a few minutes left.
You'd be surprised how many of those I skip.
There are some good poems, and there's, of course, sometimes, but it's just interesting that they
even the New Yorker sometimes publishes a good poem.
They did once. I seem to recall that. What a good poem that was.
We all love that poem.
Yes, that's right. Cecilia, we're back to Cecilia. We're going sort of counterclockwise now.
I seem to have chosen quieter poems by Austin, or maybe they just sound more quiet to me when I read them. This is also from Intensifications. It's called Moonlight Walk. I went out into midnight to cool my blood. and found October, making moonlight love. There are old men's wrinkles in gnarled trees. There are sounds one hears only among flickering shadows. No matter how slowly I passed, I seemed to walk too fast. I thought I heard a bird dreaming.
Oh, that's lovely. Isn't it interesting how these poems hold up, how they just, and he had so many, his voice was so absolutely his own, but there was a range, you know? Sometimes hear a couple of few poems by somebody and you've heard just about everything they have to say. And in his case, he keeps surprising you. Yeah, beautiful.
The word versatile comes to mind.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But they were all Austens, manifestations of Austen.
A distinctive voice. Yeah. Okay, we're back to Linda Albertano.
Yes. Well, I had met Wanda first during one of the rare weeks that she was without Austen. Because as a performer,
she must have been unhappy at that time.
I didn't know Austen yet, and she didn't seem unhappy. But
That was before she met him.
No.
Oh, that was after she met him.
Yeah, okay. But I was a performance artist. I was invited to read my text at the One World Poetry Fest in Amsterdam, and she was my roommate.
Wow.
So after we got,
I'd have been a light.
How cool is that?
You're
in Amsterdam. You're one. Coleman's your roommate.
And she was a great performer. We talked about performance a lot. We really bonded around that.
Yeah.
But so when we got back to L.A., of course, I met Austen. Uh-huh. And for a while, I mean, they were so generous. They just enfolded me into the poetry community, and I got to read my text in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. So, and they arranged poetry readings for the three of us, and I was on the radio with them. But one of the readings that Austen arranged was for the three of us to read at UCLA. Mm-hmm. And his idea was that there would be a slideshow with the lives, you know, showing each of us growing up, as children growing up. And so I have this memory of Austen as a toddler, seeing pictures of him as a toddler.
I can't picture him as a toddler.
I know.
Did he have a long beard? Did he have long hair and a long beard then as a toddler?
I could picture him. Yes. He would be in that stage when they lurch.
But it is so incongruous, you know, because he grew up.
It just seemed like he sprang up, came out of the ocean on a shell, looking just exactly like that.
Yeah, because the Austen that we knew was tall and imposing.
Big man, really big man.
Yes, and muscular.
Yeah.
Long hair, long beard.
Yes, yeah.
Just long, all over the place.
But I bet Wanda knew that younger Austen.
The toddler. But yeah, and a bullion. Vivid, mm-hmm. Very high energy,
possessing.
An extrovert.
Mm, very much so.
Yeah. And extravagantly complimentary, especially. Mm-hmm. To women, just
that's
extravagantly.
Right. That's why. Notice that everybody on this program is a woman. Something we all have in common. We're each of us is a woman. Yeah, that just happened that way.
So, you know, when you were speaking of his vulnerability, in this particular poem, which is again from the Love Project, I just never imagined that Austen brooded in the night as I do, wishing to edit words and deeds from his past. But this is called Conscience. Everything you've said is held against you always. The ugliness circulates and recirculates perpetually like blood. Everything done lives on inside, unchanged, unkillable. All the prickly flowers of cruelty, all the pungent blossoms of stupidity. Hmm. Over and over the clips replay, you, the reluctant star, try to sleep. And the images come at you, laugh, and your head breaks. The only cure for this torture? Love.
Yeah, it's, wow. You know something? The private life is different from the public life. I wouldn't say he's the last person I'd expect to write a poem like that, but somewhere in the list. It's not what you would expect, because in person he was full of braggadocio. Is that that's a word? Yeah, what is that? An Italian word? Sicilian word? I don't know. But he would tend to, he would talk about somehow how great, what a big, great guy he was. At least that was his line to me.
He would explain with great gusto and exaggeration how happy he could make women if one was to be so moved.
And a lot of people, it's maybe beginning poets or less accomplished poets, do write their secret thought, hopes and dreams and thoughts and feelings or whatever the beginning poets start out with. And it doesn't necessarily turn out compelling, vibrant on the page, surprising. And he does, and he goes in, there's a nakedness. There's a nakedness about his poetry, an absolute piercing honesty, but accompanied by an energy and the inventiveness of the poem that Uncle Ruthie read, where he's making something out of nothing, and nothing is going on, and nothing's happening, and nothing's there. It's a chair, it's a, you know, a table, it's a wall, it's a floor, and he just kind of starts spinning out of that, almost with an improvisation, like an improvisational comic does. I think that's interesting.
You can never be alone with yourself in a room having read that poem and look at things the same way.
Yeah.
You will hear the bear in the chair, and you will see the flowers coming from someone's head.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
He changes the world for you.
This is a special edition of Poets Cafe. I'm guest host Suzanne Lummis, and today we are doing a tribute to Austin Strauss. My guests are Linda Albertano, Cecilia Wallach, Uncle Ruthie, Laurel Ann Bogan. Now, this is a little bit sad, but it's the truth, and it's I want to speak to the love between Wanda and Austin. That was, if ever there was an immortal love, and if ever people were starbound to be together. I think Austin called me quite a few times after Wanda died. And I think he was lonely, reaching out for people. But also he told me the stories of the two of them together at the end. And it's funny, I think it was a love affair that was mysterious even to them. Mm-hmm. And Austin indicated to me that it was mysterious certainly to Wanda. He came across some journal entries of hers where she was saying, and this is personal, but if it was all that personal, he shouldn't have told me. He should have known I'd tell it on the radio. I mean, don't tell me if you don't want people to know. But it's the truth, part of a true story. In these journal entries, she was saying she wished she could leave him, but she was too much in love. She couldn't, and I think maybe her family wanted her to leave him, or friends or something, but she couldn't. She was too much in love. And that's the thing. Love will do that to you. And they did. They were both explosive. I can't imagine two such explosive personalities being under the same roof for so long, but they couldn't separate. They had to be together.
And the forgiveness is really great then.
And
there's a dynamic in there, isn't there?
Yeah. I asked them once, sitting around the table much too late at night after a poetry group, and they were staying at my house, and I said, so do you guys, when you have a fight, do you try not to go to bed angry? I said, no, we go to bed angry.
It's maybe either that or get no sleep at all. Just be up for the next 48 hours until you get over being angry, huh? So, yeah. And he told me that, and this is dramatic, but also the truth, that he felt they were still having a little bit of, even when Wanda was very near death, and she couldn't speak, they were still able to somehow have a fight, because it seemed like at some point she was looking at him like she was very angry about something that upset him. And he didn't know what she was angry about because she couldn't speak, but she managed to be angry about something in her waning hours. And it was, as I said, it was an angry look, but then it got, she got over that, whatever she was mad about. And I was probably, because I think I know why, because he was flirting with the nurse, I'm sure. I just figured that out. That'd do it. You were dying, and your beloved is flirting with the nurse. But he said then that look went away, and it softened again. And he went out to get a coffee or something, or just ran out to just grab something to eat. He just said, get a bagel or something. And he came back, rushed back, gets stopped at the door, and is told she just passed. And even though you know it's happening soon, but you just don't think it's happening then. You just never think the person will depart this world before you get back with your bagel. And his legs gave out from under him, and he collapsed on the floor, sobbing wildly, and just lay there sobbing. And I think that there's such a human truth in that you think you're ready, but there's a part of you that is never going to be ready, and you don't think it's going to happen, and you always think it's going to happen the next, 2 days from now, or the next day, or 10 hours. You never think it will happen right then, as you come back with your bagel to, sit down next to your wife.
Death is the true surprise of life. You can expect it. You can be watching someone getting ready. It will always come as a big surprise.
Yeah, that's what they, Does anybody else have any final thing they want to say, or any final memory or anything
Suzanne, for putting this together.
Yes, thanks, Suzanne.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I got the right people. Yeah. These are the right people. There are 4 million people in Los Angeles, but we 5 are the best of the 4 million to talk about. We got this right. Hey, we got this right anyway, We have about 5 more minutes to kill. How about not to kill? I don't want to say kill because we've been talking about death. Okay, we've got 5 more minutes. Does anybody have a short poem they'd like to read?
Yes, I do.
Okay, Cecilia has a short poem she'd like to read. Oh, and I might have one too, very short too. That's good.
It's called The Favor.
Uh-huh.
You did me a favor, pushing me out the window. I learned to fly.
Oh, that is short and so beautiful. And I would like to close. It's so short, so beautiful. That will be sort of that will be the preface to this poem, which is probably my favorite Austin Strauss poem, because it captures one of those rare, perfect moments where there is an alignment in the universe. Everything is as it should be. Everything is glowing. Everything is alive. Everything is good. And those moments tend not to last very long. But you have to capture them, realize that they're happening while they're happening. And, of course, his son is named Ian. He mentions Ian at the beginning. L.A. morning. Maybe it's Ian. Maybe walking with him to the sitters, a kind of religious exercise, his singing counterpoint to mine as we walk, wakens the gods. The fog dances more gently into the trees. This ripest of moments gives birth to amazement so pure it hurts. That the world arranges itself so vividly before me. That all things, trees, houses, weeds, stones, roses, even porch pigeons and a flat gray sky, everything glows. And my woman loves me, and my son adores me, and these marvels were set out for us to stroll through, and for one sweet minute, I have absolutely nothing to regret.
Oh.
Okay.
Did you see that?
All right. And that's from Wide Awake Poets of Los Angeles and Beyond. And I would like to thank my most perfect guests, all the 4 million people in Los Angeles. What is it? 300 million people in the country.
A whole gazillion amount.
All the billions of people in the world.
That
is one of those perfect moments. Everybody who's here is exactly where they're meant to be. Doesn't always happen that way, right? This has been a special edition of Poets Cafe. I'm Suzanne Lummis, and we've been paying tribute to former KPFK host Austin Strauss. My guests have been Linda Albertano, Cecilia Wallach, Uncle Ruthie, Laurel Ann Bogan. I'd also like to thank our producer, Marlena Bond, one of the best producers in at least this galaxy. Maybe some other galaxy. Look for the Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to Poets Cafe on KPFK, Pacifica Radio, for all of Southern California and beyond.